Paulson from Americana Music News, and this is a special edition of the podcast straight from Kansas City, the metropolis which is now hosting the Folk Alliance International Conference. And it's an amazing event if you've not been here. Virtually every hotel room for about three floors is talented people. They call them private showcases, but there's really nothing private about them. The doors are open wide. There's beer and wine everywhere, and you can just walk down a hallway and see seven or eight talented people in succession. There's more talent here, as I've said, per square foot than anywhere else we've ever been. And so when you come to an event like this, you say, who do we want to talk to? Who do we want to interview? And you have this massive list of people you might talk with. Everyone's not a household name, and some are incredibly talented and need to be known better. But the only way in the end you can figure out who you want to talk to is listen to their music. And when I heard James Maddox stuff, I was knocked out. Sometimes you just book somebody because you love their music, and that's what this is about today. So we're glad to sit down with you, James, after that frothing compliment.
Thank you, Ken.
Good to meet you, James.
Thank you, Ken. It's great to be here, and thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, you have a brand new album called Insanity Versus Humanity. That requires some explaining.
Well, I actually come up with the title before I come up with the song. I just thought, the world is an insane place, and there are so many things that are out of kilter, and I think it's all been exasperated by the current president, and it's just things, it goes way back before that. The level of poverty and starvation and wars and famine and waste, the whole way that the world is organized, in my opinion, is upside down. I saw a statistic the other day in America. 70% of America owns 2.7% of the wealth. I mean, it is insane. Anyway, I come up with the title Insanity Versus Humanity, and I wrote a bunch of songs that were kind of more of the political side of things, you know. So, and I thought it was a good title for a record. So off I went with the guitar.
So it's interesting because political music kind of fell out of fashion for a very long time.
Do you know what? I used to do a lot of political music when I was younger, but it's very hard to do political songs without sounding preachy and simplistic. What's the word? Cliched. It's very hard to find that voice, and I find it particularly difficult, and I think in those terms too. So I lost that voice for a long time, and then I started to try and find it again. And it's about writing about politics and the world around you in a way that is not too obvious and too cliched and too straight down the line. It's just that becomes not very interesting to me. And so you have to find a way in that is inclusive and not too preachy, as I say. You know, otherwise it just becomes simplistic. So it's difficult sometimes to find that, but hopefully I've done it. The whole record's not all political. Some of it is and some of it isn't. But there's definitely a few songs on there that have got a political bent.
Well, think about political songs. If they work, they can be timeless. I mean, you think about the Clash stuff, you know.
Dylan, of course, has written a couple.
Springsteen,
yeah. There's a tradition, a great long tradition in folk music particularly, obviously. So there's a lot of it out there. I just wanted to be a small part of it for this record.
Well, most Americana audiences would probably know you initially as a member of Wood.
Yeah, maybe. That was a record I did on the Columbia label about 1999-2000.
And was that your first dip in the water as
a
professional?
No, it wasn't. I had a record deal on Stiff Records in England.
Wow.
I think I was the last artist ever to be signed to Stiff Records. And then after that, I had a record deal with Polydor Records in the UK. This was all in the UK. And this was doing the political, much more political stuff. It was at the time of a movement in England called Red Wedge. It was a Labour Party thing. And there was bands like the Redskins. It was the miners' strike in England in the early 80s. There's a lot of things going on. And I was kind of part of that. And I got signed to Stiff Records and we...
That is so cool. That's like, you need to move that up in your bio.
You know I do. It's so long ago, I forget.
So, I'm trying to think. Would the first signing have been, would Jake Rivera have signed Elvis Costello first?
Elvis Costello, the Pogues, of course.
Oh,
It was the punk label.
Yeah, Reckless Eric, all that stuff, yeah.
It was the punk label.
That would be so cool if you are, in fact, the person who put Stiff out of business. That's great.
Well, I remember when we got signed, we were all in the room with the A&R man, and I'll never forget this, and I still talk to the guys about this. He looked at us and he said to us, "You're all going to be very wealthy young men." We never made a penny, of course.
Well, I am. Maybe it's still going to happen. You never know. This podcast may put you over the top.
Yes.
You also have ties to the Water Boys.
Yeah, Mike Scott. I've written a few songs with Mike. I'm a huge Water Boys fan. And when I contacted him on MySpace a few years ago, and I actually did. I went to do an audition for them when I lived in London, and I ended up going to meet Mike and spending the day with him. And then many years later, I MySpaced him, and then he wrote back to me and says, "Look, I've got these lyrics. Do you want to write some melodies for them?" So I got these lyrics over the internet, and then I wrote about 5 or 6 tunes, and 3 of which have ended up on his records and on a couple of them on mine, and there's a few others floating around as well. And I've been a massive fan of Mike's ever since I ever heard the big music, you know, and the whole Pagan Place and the Hole of the Moon. So I'm incredibly lucky to make that connection. I love Mike.
So you've got a new album, and other than interviews on high quality podcasts, how are you promoting that? Touring?
Well, as much as I can. I do pretty well in the Northeast around my New York area, and I have an agent now, and we're hoping to get out more into the country. Touring's always been a tricky one for me. I've done okay in my locale, but never really. It's difficult to get out into the rest of the country, but we're definitely starting, and it's not through lack of desire. I'm hopeful to make that transition to be more of a national artist than just the kind of in the New York area.
Well, the Folk Alliance is a pretty good start. A lot of people hear you. You know, I always, when I read publicists writing about their artists, it's really hard to convey music in words, and they inevitably try to grab for comparisons. And I have to tell you, yours over the years have been high-end comparisons. You know, it'll be, he's kind of like Van Morrison on this song. He's kind of like Bruce Springsteen. Willie Nile is mentioned.
Yeah, lovely.
Do any of those ring true for you?
Yeah, they all do. I think of my influences, I love like Paul Brady. I love Steve Forbert. I love Neil Young. And I love early Springsteen, and I'm a big Van Morrison fan. I love the way that Van plays with the band, and make people have, when I do a live gig with the band, I like to feel like we're a Van Morrison-esque band where everybody gets a chance to play, and we extend things, so things are not always the same. Slightly jammy,
right,
which I really like. So all of those comparisons, I love them all.
It's crystal clear to me now why I was drawn to your music. You just described my record collection. We had Paul Brady on the show just a couple of weeks
Did
ago.
You? I used to go and see Paul when I was in London, and I love that Hard Station record. I just love the way he sings. I just love the way he plays his guitar. He's one of the masters, you know.
And it sounds dumb of me, but I had no idea about his folk roots. I just knew, you know, Paul Brady the Rocker from 1980 on.
He played with Andy Irvine, and he played with a bunch of those Irish folkies, which I loved. Do you ever hear a band called The Moving Hearts?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I used to love that. Christy Moore and The Moving Hearts. And Irish, I used to play in a lot of Irish bands when I was a kid in Leicester. We would tour around the Irish circuit, and I fell in love with Irish music, and I still hold it. I still love it when I hear it.
Well, we have teased our listeners with who you might sound like. It's about time for them to hear your music.
Right.
Can you talk a bit about I Can't Settle?
I come up with the riff, which is real at the front of the song. You can hear it. It kind of sets the song up. And I was just sitting around in the kitchen, and I come up with the title. I often work from a title. And then I just had to... It's about a restless soul, you know. It's a slightly... Each verse is a different story and a different kind of image in your mind. And it's a slightly, not surreal, but it's not, it's one of those songs where the words suggest ideas rather than a very literate. But it's just about not being able to settle and about my personal life, I suppose. And I moved around a lot in my life. And I'm still moving, you know. It's about not settling.
James Maddock, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tim.
From Insanity Versus Humanity, I Can't Settle.
Ceaseless, spinning, rusting.
Our next guest is Allison Pierce, who's making her first appearance at the Folk Alliance here in Kansas City. Great to visit with you, Allison.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You have an album that's come out in the past year. Much critical acclaim coming your way. It's called Year of the Rabbit, but you knew that. And you, for years, have toured with your sister as a member of the Pierces. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, when it's suddenly you and you're making all the decisions, is that liberating or frightening?
It's actually both. There are things about it that are much harder without her. Interviews are a lot more fun with her. You can bounce things off each other, and you know, we can pick up the slack when the other one kind of is tired or whatever. Like right now, it would be nice to have a partner.
I'll work really hard to make this happen.
Some things are much easier, like because that's probably our biggest arguments were things like who's going to sing lead on a song, and decisions are even that can be difficult too, because like now I make all the decisions, but it's sometimes easier. So it's both.
So has this affected your writing for one instead of for two?
You know, we always wrote for one. Okay. We didn't do a lot of co-writing. I would say maybe 20% was co-written.
But I assume there are certain songs you wrote that work for two voices. And
definitely. I mean, we always made them for two voices, but generally we wrote on our own.
And how would you describe your first solo album? What were you trying to accomplish?
I don't know. I had these songs. I'd been putting aside certain songs that kind of felt like they weren't for the Pierces. And these particular songs had, like, they were like a group. They all kind of came out in this special way. Like, they felt like there's certain songs that you almost feel like you give birth to. Like, they just, and then you're like, where did that come from? Like, they come out really quickly, and they felt special to me. So I kind of put them aside and waited. And so I just had this need to make them come to life.
And you came to the studio and worked each day with a fairly legendary producer, mm-hmm. Ethan Johns. How did that happen?
Catherine and I recorded our first album in Nashville at Woodlawn, which is a legendary studio. I think it's now owned by Gillian Welch and David Rawlings. But we made our first record there, and in the studio next door, Ethan Johns was recording Ryan Adams' first record, Heartbreaker, and we got to be friends. We've talked about making a record together for years. I sent him this group of songs, and he loved them, and there was a few times over the years where we almost made it, and it wasn't quite the right time, and then finally, when Catherine and I split up, I said, hey, you still up for making this record? And he said, absolutely, let's do it.
It's actually a record in which I wouldn't describe it as spare, but it's...
You mean like sparse?
Exactly. It's not something... your voice is front and center. Mm. And you don't have a lot of players on this record.
No, it was just pretty much just him and me. And then a couple of guys came in, pedal steel and violin on a couple songs.
Is that the way you prefer to work?
Not necessarily. I think that was budgetary reasons. I mean, we would have probably loved to have a great band in there. That would have been ideal, but I love doing it like that. We would start out just he'd be on the drums and I would be on the guitar and I would sing, and we would get a take of that, and that would be the foundation, and then we would do overdubs.
Well, one of the many successes of the Pierces was the fact that your song Secret showed up on as theme to Pretty Little Liars. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a younger artist, obviously you know this, but when records don't sell like they once did, mm-hmm. you've got to find other income. Do you specifically write with a notion that maybe this could end up in television or media of other sorts?
You know, I don't. That was just a huge blessing. That song was on so many TV shows, and in fact, we sang it on Gossip Girl. Do you remember that show? We were on Gossip Girl. We were like there was a debutante ball, and we were the band at the ball. So that song was just all over TV. So that we got so lucky. But that song is very specific, which TV loves. You know, got a secret, can you keep it? Like, it's a specific theme. But I don't... publishers are always asking artists to write specific themes like that. You know, like, it's a beautiful day, or we're going to take over the world. But I just don't... I don't really do that. I just write what... Like, things just pop out, and if they don't pop out, then that's that.
So what's the future hold?
Well, if I knew that.
Is there a new album, a tour? What's on the horizon?
Let's see. Yes, I have a tour coming up in March. I'm going to be on the Northeast coast. Not all the dates are set yet, but we can let you know.
So we want to make sure that our listeners get to hear some of your fine music. And could you talk a little bit about a song we're about to hear called Fool Him?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that song is about how relationships, funny things, that when you are in love with someone and they only seem to want you when you don't want them, you know, classic situation. Luckily, in my later years, I've kind of... That's no longer my pattern, thank God. It's a painful one. But, yeah, that's what that one's about.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Allison, for joining us. And
you're welcome.
Here's Fool Him.
He was singing so soft. He was singing so soft now. I could not pretend, 'cause I could never fool him. He was gone for so long. He's been gone for so long.
American Music News is a podcast produced by Sprinter Media, music by Dave Paulson, and you can reach us at amneditor@gmail.com.